Welcome aboard. It is the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Ro's taking another day off, but we have Richard Roper here with us in studio today. Hi.
I think he's one of the tens of thousands of people whose flights were affected by the weather yesterday, and it's having a ripple effect now.
What a crazy day it was. I mean,
oh my gosh.
Was watching the Game of Thrones and then seeing the snow outside. Winter's coming. There was something really strange going on there. Of course, we had a day watching the Masters, and we're going to talk about Tiger coming up as well.
He made a life comeback, according to Donald Trump. The president is now going to give him this amazing honor because he won the Masters.
You think about the long, emotional, painful road, though, back to the top for him. And you just, the tears were flowing in my living room.
Really?
I had a bunch of people over. Not in yours?
For the Tim Anderson Grand Slam, quite frankly, from my point of view. That's just me.
Kev, what about you? You're a golf fan.
Unbelievable. Oh, one of the coolest sports moments I've seen. To see him come back from all the injuries and obviously a lot of the self-inflicted wounds in his personal life.
Right.
But have his kids there. His kids had never been there
that
for
was
a major
beautiful.
Victory.
That was
explain
lovely
that
to
part
see.
Piece of it. Why his kids just, he didn't want them there? They
no,
didn't
I mean,
want to be
so
there?
So young. It's been 11 years since he last won.
Right.
So to have them at Augusta, they flew in Sunday morning, and that was pretty cool to see. But for someone who loves the game of golf so much because of Tiger, it was amazing to watch him do that.
Yeah, and when he hugged his son, that moment, you just felt all the emotion and all of what he had achieved, you know, peering before his eyes. It was a beautiful thing.
I did think, though, it was a little tasteless. In addition to the green Masters jacket, they brought out a BMW with the golf club sticking out of the back windshield there, the memory of Thanksgiving back in the day.
Gee. That's all
he's
behind
all forgiven,
us now, Richard.
It's all forgiven.
But the one thing he brought out again was the red mock turtleneck. And I just
amazing.
I just wonder,
he's
guys
the only
everywhere,
one who could pull that off.
I was going to say, can every guy wear that?
No.
Should every guy wear that?
No.
Mike Douglas, when he was hosting a talk show in the late 60s, in an interview, we're going to have Elton John and John Lennon and Martin Luther King and Ava Gabor on the show. You know, he could do it back in 66, maybe.
The mock turtleneck piece of it, I think, is a part of it that is hard to pull off. But then the stretchy nature of the shirt also, I think, makes it such.
You got to be in pretty good shape if you're wearing that thing.
You got to know what
you're
doing.
Pretty cool to see how much, you know, all the other golfers who are like my age, right? We all grew up watching Tiger, and they all, even all those, the post-game interviews, if you want to call it that, even if they weren't prompted or asked about Tiger, every single one of those guys brought up Tiger Woods.
And what it was like
being involved with that and how much they respect him and what he means for the game of golf. I mean, the game of golf would not be where it is.
Because when I was growing up, nobody talked about golf.
And he made it cool when you were younger. It was like, wow, who's this guy?
Kev's right. He's twice the age of some of the young up-and-comers. That'd be as if Steph Curry got to see Michael Jordan win an NBA championship while he was a rookie.
Right.
It's pretty incredible. You see that golf. I think, didn't Jack Nicklaus win a big tournament, Kev, when he was in his late 40s?
He did. That was a huge
46. 46. So, yeah. But this was, you got to give him a lot of credit, too, because he worked so hard. Those back surgeries were serious.
Three back surgeries. He had three knee surgeries.
And, I think, Kev, at one point, he was probably ranked like number 200 or something like that.
Yeah, now he's climbed his way back up to sixth in the world.
I thought it was 1,000 something.
Lauren's right. 1,199th. Less than 2 years ago.
Kev is actually only three spots behind that.
That's right.
You're there, right? You're still there.
Yeah, right
there. You're 1-2 years away from winning the Masters. That's what that means.
I mean, I'm surprised they even ranked that deep.
Right.
860 or 942.
How do you keep track?
So that is remarkable. That's, you know, he's Sportsman of the Year right now at Sports Illustrated. If he never does anything, probably the rest of the year.
And to think that in that time, less than 2 years ago, he was found slumped behind the wheel, passed out of a car, and there, you know, so much going on in his life.
Yeah, and it was 0.0 on the breathalyzer, but it was the painkillers, I think, the opioids that were messing with him. So, and it does seem like he has really made an effort to be a much better person.
He talked about that. You kept hearing that from him, you know, when in the post interviews, just saying, look, I just got to get my mind where it needs to be. And I think I've finally done that.
And, you know, you got to give people credit, you know, if they're trying, and he has come back. It is an amazing story. The ratings must have been through the roof.
That's the thing.
Because it was bumped up, it was considered a morning golf telecast, highest ever rated.
Well, they say he's a one-man economic stimulus package for golf.
Absolutely.
Because not only does he mean the world to golf and the broadcasters and all the related industries, Nike alone, they estimate $22 million in ad value just from the final hole, that final putt, the Nike appearance during that time. And then you think about, on top of that, what he's done for golf in general, the renewed interest.
Absolutely.
And you think that there might be a new resurgence now. I mean, I wonder if young kids coming up
Well, there's some pretty cool players that got, have some charisma and personality. Kev knows that for sure. And I like the fact that all of them were really excited. You didn't get any of this kind of resentment, like, what about us? They realized that. And as Kev mentioned, they were all kids when this guy first came.
Yeah, a lot of them watched their hero.
Yeah. Exactly. So, and that's pretty cool that they appreciate the history and the magnitude of that event.
And Tiger makes all them a lot more money. Because if Tiger's not there, the pot's not as large, and there's less money.
Yeah, great point.
Tiger over the years has made a lot of golfers a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, you just you wish him well. It was easy to be rooting for him, and you saw a lot of people were. You even heard the other golfers saying, "Well, you knew the cheers and the applause for Tiger versus for me. It was really clear."
Yeah.
Well, Brooks Koepka at one point, it was a great scene. He was about to tee off, and all of a sudden, the gallery right next to the tee box started going nuts because everybody saw that Tiger had birdied. Wow. I think it was 13, and Brooks Koepka jerked around and was like completely stunned by the roar of the crowd, and wow, he had to wait a minute to tee off.
Then there's the guy that made the $85,000 bet on William
that
Hill.
That looks like a no-brainer in retrospect.
Sure, but it's actually, 12-1 is only because he's Tiger Woods. He probably should have been 20-1. But for his $85,000, this guy is getting $1.1 million.
Sick.
That's
so cool.
That's a good day for that guy.
That's really good. We actually are going to be talking to BetChicago.com.
Cool.
The president and founder will be joining us about the Tiger Woods thing that you just mentioned, Richard, and how many people took him and why it was a really bad day for William Hill, even though they were rooting for the game of golf in general.
Yeah.
And the future of sports betting in Illinois, as you know, that's on the table. They're hoping something happens in time for the football season.
If you let this pass you by, you're just turning down guaranteed tens of millions of dollars in revenue that's going to other states already. So don't be stupid. That's my slogan for the year. Don't be stupid.
Governor Pritzker says $200 million is what's anticipated
estimated
from sports betting if it becomes legal and everything goes well. And again, that seems that it's pretty close to happening. So
JB knows the world of sporting chance. Before he was an elected official,
he
used to host some big-time charity poker games here in Chicago. And I've sat and played with him, and he knows how to play poker. He knows how to hold them, knows when to fold them, knows when to walk away, and he proved in the governor's race he knows when to run.
I love that. So he knows what he's talking about.
Absolutely.
So we got that. Blair Kamen also is going to be joining us, Pulitzer Prize-winning Chicago Tribune architecture critic, about Notre Dame, and we continue to follow all of the updates there. Both Kim Gordon will keep you posted top and bottom of the hour, but also we will be talking about it throughout the show as we learn more.
It's terrible.
Isn't it? Attention turns to what can be saved. And when you look at any video of this and you see that giant spire that collapsed into the center of this beautiful architectural treasure, and you see the destruction you can see, it makes you think, gosh, if you've been there, in every direction.
Both you and I have both been there and been awed by it. And, that's a structure that survived wars and all kinds of other things. And to see this happen today is just devastating.
800 years old. Wow. So it began building it in 1163 and then took nearly 200 years to build, filled with just all kinds of architectural treasures and meaningful religious relics.
Absolutely.
And things like that. So we're going to talk about both of those things.
And it's Easter week. The timing, my goodness.
I guess the only saving grace and the only prayers answered there is that it didn't happen yesterday on Palm Sunday when there would have been potentially thousands of people in and around that church. So that's if you look for some light here. But as we watch it burn, they call it the City of Lights, Paris. And if you see the largest light right now in that skyline is a really devastating one, and the firefighters in the water and everything's on the scene. They say 400 firefighters are there right now trying to save whatever they can as other workers go in and out trying to see what's safe to move in and out and grab the treasures that they can save. So that's coming up. We're going to have a top five of five you won't believe, and then we'll lead you up to the White Sox game at 6:30. But we're going to be joined by Joe Donlin from WGN, principal anchor over there.
Great.
In just a couple minutes. But let's find out first what's happening at the bottom of the hour with Kim Gordon.
And Anna, as you've been talking about, we continue to monitor the massive, devastating fire at Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris.
It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Rose off today, but Richard Roper is here, and so is Joe Donlin, principal anchor at WGN. Hi, Joe. And I have to turn your mic up in order for us to hear you, so that would help. Sorry, Joe.
That's all right.
That's not the right treatment. You should. You deserve better than that, and I'm sorry.
I was afraid I hadn't turned it on at that
point. Nope, it's all me. It's all me. It's on my end.
Come on,
I own it.
Come on, two of us are professionals out of the three of us. Let's act accordingly.
So you survived the snow yesterday. Did you get a lot near you?
We did. Actually, we were in South Bend for the weekend.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And had to drive back to Chicago in that. And that's the nice thing about working with Skilling and Bill Snyder. I'm able to call and get the up-to-the-minute forecast. And it was all pretty true. I guess we got a little bit more snow than we were expecting or thought. But there were a lot of cars that had slid off the freeway and slid off big time into ditches. And it was a mess on the way back, for sure.
Driving back from Champaign. I was down at U of I for Roger Ebert Fest, the annual film festival. Sure. And when I left Champaign, it was a beautiful day. And then it was rain, and about 50 miles outside of Chicago, maybe 60, it was a snowstorm. And like Joe said, I counted about 8 different cars, different vehicles in ditches, and I actually got off I-57 and started taking, you know, the side roads, because no one had been on the expressway yet. They usually do such a great job, but it hit so fast, and man, it was, I was going 75 because the speed limit's 70 on I-57, and then we were down to 20.
Yeah. Waze pitched us off the tollway onto the 90, onto 94.
Exactly.
And even then, there were several cars, so I can only imagine how bad the tollway was. It did pitch us back over as we got closer into town, but it was pretty messy, but for the most part, slushy and wet. Luckily, it didn't get too icy.
So Skilling was right, near record snowfall in some points. We're going to talk to Tom Skilling coming up here on the show.
Yeah, I got a few words for him.
Wait, no, so you're a golf fan, Joe, and you're quite a golfer, I understand. Well, were you able to watch the Masters or were you driving in on the way back?
You know, we had DVR'd it, and we were going to watch it when we got back, which we did, but of course in this day and age, it's impossible to not find out. Of course, I picked my phone up to look for something else, and there were 3 push alerts, and I found out who had won, but it still, you know, was really exciting to watch, and it is incredible. And I would have never bet money against Tiger just because he's Tiger, but I was in that camp where I just logically didn't think he was going to be able to do it again physically. I mean, he's had 4 back surgeries. Think about it, the last time he won in 08, he won it with a torn ACL. Do you remember that?
Right.
So I was just talking with the guys back in the sports department, and they said that over the last 3 majors, Tiger had the best overall score combined. So I guess
that's incredible.
Yeah, we shouldn't really be surprised, but
wasn't he 21 under par right out of the gate when he was 21 or something?
Right. He destroyed the field, which is another interesting point, Anna, because a lot of the golfers today have heard about the Tiger allure. You know, they've heard about the Tiger roars.
Right.
They've heard about this intimidation factor and how people behind him just seem to fall apart just thinking about what he could be doing either ahead or behind them. I think it was just sort of a myth until yesterday, for a lot of these golfers who weren't around at the time and maybe might not have been intimidated like golfers from the past when he was so dominant. But I'll tell you, after yesterday, they sure know about it, because that's exactly what happened. Golfers around him were falling apart, and he just trudged on.
But Joe, as a golfer, you know, too, it's incredible, because Tiger, when he was first coming up, there were still guys like Tom Watson and Greg Norman, you know, and now you got guys, some of these young players, as you know, are incredibly talented. A lot of them are a lot stronger, better athletes. You don't see the John Daly's too much anymore out there. You know, you see these guys who, and obviously the, you know, the clubs and everything have become so sophisticated, and yet he still stormed through that field, which is just remarkable.
Yeah. Well, look at him. He's still in amazing physical shape.
Yeah, he's put on a lot. He's probably put on 10, 15 pounds of muscle.
I was saying, how many golfers do you guys know could wear the stretch mock turtleneck?
Yeah.
Well, the other thing, too, and I didn't realize this, I read this somewhere, where they don't give them new green jackets. So once you win one, so that's the same jacket he wore.
No kidding.
In 97. And he was, the reason they were tipped off was because he said, wow, it still fits.
Because,
so I guess people were expecting.
Oh, you know what? I think I'll go. Let's all go home today and try on our clothes from 1997 and report back tomorrow.
That would be so depressing. Yeah, I'm not going to do that. Thank
you. Fat guy in a little coat.
But remember, they did the flashbacks to his first win for the Masters, and when he first put on that green jacket, he was swimming in it.
Yeah.
It was big.
Yeah,
he was big, so he's kind of grown into it.
Think about this, too. I mean, we talk about what he's gone through physically. 2 years ago, I was just talking with Dan Rohn. 2 years ago, Tiger said he couldn't even sit at the Champions Dinner. He was in so much pain.
Yeah.
And having gone through some back issues myself, nothing to that magnitude, you cannot get into a position that's comfortable. I couldn't put my shoes on for 6 months.
Kidding.
I can't imagine going out and winning the Masters, which I think probably lends itself. One thing I couldn't help but think when he walked up to 16, he knows that course so well.
Yeah.
And when
he
put that tee shot on 16 within, a foot or two, you're like, okay, it's over.
Yeah.
Wow.
It felt like it.
That's incredible.
Well, what's coming up on the WGN TV News tonight?
Well, we're going to do more on Notre Dame, which everyone's watching, of course. That was just such a tragic loss to see the magnificence of that structure, as you've been discussing here on the show. And I know you're going to talk about it a little bit more.
Yep.
We'll get more in-depth on that. Gosh, to see that spire come down today and to think about some of the relics that more than likely are lost. I guess the only good sign at this point, as we've been watching it over the last few minutes, is that it appears first responders and fire crews are now on the building, which is a good sign because they couldn't even get into it. It was so intense and so hot. So
yeah,
that might be a good sign. But what was lost? I've heard there were parts of the crown, the original cross. There were just, you know, so many artifacts and important treasures inside that cathedral.
Sure.
We're going to have to, I guess, just sort of wait to see how much was done, but it looks like a tremendous amount.
Devastating, truly devastating. Thank you, Joe. We appreciate it. Joe,
good
Donlan.
Talking to you, Joe.
We'll see you tonight.
See you guys.
4, 5, 6, 9, and 10.
Sounds good. Take care.
We've got Kim Gordon's news coming up in 2 minutes. It's the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Ro is off today, and Richard Roper is sitting in as we continue to track the tragedy, the devastation in Notre Dame, the cathedral in Paris, the massive fire today. The official spokesperson from there says everything is burning. The entire roof has collapsed. The spire has collapsed. And as you just watched it, and during in the middle of the day when it finally became clear that this was a tragedy, because it started out this morning with a smoke reported at the Notre Dame Cathedral, and I was listening to it about 10:30 this morning, and it seemed like things were going to be under control, and it quickly escalated, as we've seen, to the point where the spire just collapsed into the cathedral itself. And if you've seen that video, it's very emotional. A lot of people who were at the scene burst into tears just seeing that image.
Yeah, and President Macron arrived in his meeting with police. I mean, this is a huge thing, not just for Paris and France, but for the entire world. And
it
especially
is.
As we mentioned, you know, you and I have each been there, and I know as a Catholic, this is Easter week for me, and it's just, you know, the timing of this. And we I guess we don't know yet the cause. Accidental, there's no evidence of any foul play, but they don't really know much more than that.
Just that it was under construction at the time. There was this renovation project, multi-million dollar renovation project. You saw the scaffolding up 10 stories all around the spire.
Yeah, right.
And you could see that part of what is what caught fire.
Yeah.
We want to talk about the architectural significance here, because just like you're saying, Richard, if you've been there, and both you and I have
awe-inspiring.
It is awe-inspiring. And just everywhere you look, there's something so intricate and so stunningly beautiful.
So historic. I mean,
so historic.
You know, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, that, you know, is based there.
Right.
You know, one of the most famous novels of all time.
800 years of history and so much to talk about. Yeah. One of the most architecturally significant cathedrals on earth, if not the most, to say nothing of the religious significance and the historical significance. Let's talk to Blair Kamen, the architectural critic from the Chicago Tribune. And we appreciate your time, Blair. As you were watching this, what were your thoughts and what you were seeing?
I was shocked and sad, and I mean, this is, you know, it's out of a nightmare. It's truly awful. Notre Dame is, you know, a world landmark. It's a symbol of Paris and of France itself. It's a symbol of French survival. You know, the French Prime Minister just tweeted that this was like watching, you know, part of ourselves go up in flames. So I'll always remember this day. It's an awful day.
Blair, can you talk about a little bit about the building of Notre Dame? I mean, we're talking what, you know, nearly, you know, 1,000 years ago, 800 plus years ago, and how long it took, and what a marvel of architecture for the, you know, with thinking of the lack of technology at the time. Can you speak a little bit about, you know, the construction of the cathedral?
Of course. This is one of the great French Gothic cathedrals that went up during the surge of cathedral building in the 12th and 13th centuries. What distinguishes these works is their synthesis of architecture, engineering, and artistry. So you see the express structure in the flying buttresses, and you see the incredible delicacy of decoration in the rose windows, especially. Notre Dame is special. I was just talking to Allison Fisher, an architecture curator at the Art Institute, and you know, she was saying that unlike Chartres and Amiens, or Chartres in particular, which is, you know, outside of Paris, Notre Dame is it's right in the middle of the city. Mm-hmm. You know, it's right. It's on this island in the Seine. There are all these other buildings around it. So, you know, it's monumental in the context of the city, and its urban location, I think, is what, and its proximity to the daily life of Paris is what is part of what makes it special. It may not be the greatest of the Gothic cathedrals, but none has such a cultural and emotional and religious resonance as this building does.
You mentioned the flying buttresses. There was a firefighting expert, I believe, on CNN earlier, and we'll be talking to someone later here on the program as well, who said it was those ribs, those wood beams that are so artfully crafted. If you've been inside the cathedral and you would see them, you could just stand there in awe of each and every one of them by how they were crafted. And they said the firefighter was saying that because of this 800-old wood that had dried out over numbers of years, that it became pretty rapid fuel for this fire, and that the construction materials certainly didn't help in this case.
Absolutely. There's no doubt that, you know, a wood structure that's centuries old is tinder. What's interesting here is that there was a fire 13 years ago in Chicago, the Pilgrim Baptist fire, that also occurred during a renovation. That was obviously, a great building by two great Chicago architects, Louis Sullivan and Dagmar Adler. It all but its walls, exterior walls, burned down. This is a building on the south side. Renovation is dangerous business. You know, when you have open flame dealing with lead or asphalt, unless you're, you know, if you're not careful, something like this can happen. Now, obviously, there's no conclusion yet as to whether or not this was caused by lackadaisical construction worker, but certainly, you know, I'm sure that will be a likely cause or inquiry.
And we want to talk to a firefighting expert, because people have so many questions. This is out of all of our territory, but they're sort of second guessing what happened there. A lot of people said, well, why didn't they do this? Why didn't you do this? Why did it take so long for water to get there? Well, there are reasons for that, and we are going to be talking to somebody who has handled very difficult structures, structural fires. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the significance of, I know the French President Macron has talked about how workers did try to save things from the inside, architectural relics, though. I mean, what could you possibly save?
And how would you know what to grab and how quickly to grab it? I mean, these are not curators. These are not historians.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, grab everything you can as quickly as you can. I mean, thank God there are no deaths associated with this. But to me, it does recall, you know, 9/11, just in the shock of seeing this iconic building on fire, you know, and with its spire toppling.
It does, you're right. It has a cinematic. It looks like one of these, you know, millions of disaster movies we've seen, Blair. Unfortunately, it's not fiction.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing that, like, you know, I get up this morning and the last, you know, absolutely, you would just never think this would happen. You know, that how could this happen to this revered symbol that's beloved by so many? As you mentioned, Richard, you know, with Easter week, for Catholics all around the world, this is a tragedy. It's awful. It's truly a nightmare.
The latest from the scene we're hearing is that they're trying to save one of the bell towers that they thought they were going to be able to, but that it's pretty dicey at this moment. Speak to the significance of those, because I know they started, I think they were automated after a while, that to just initially you had to climb the stairs, and I think visitors to Notre Dame could climb those stairs at one point and see the bell tower and take a look at that view.
Right. Well, I mean, that is a good point. You know, one of the things about this building is that you look at it, but you look out at Paris from it. Mm-hmm. I think that there's something magical about climbing, as we all know from the observation decks in Chicago. There's something magical about climbing to a high point and looking out over the city. Now, even though this is much lower than, you know, the observation decks here, there's still something fantastic about going up in these buildings. You know, I've experienced it at St. Paul's in London. you know, where you get that sort of bird's eye view. And obviously the surroundings here are extraordinary. It's, you know, it's the Seine, it's the cathedral itself, it's the plaza in front of the cathedral, which is, you know, a noted gathering spot both for tourists and political protesters. So, I mean, you know, this is a building that's really embedded in the life of its city, and, you know, there, and in the life of the world. And, you know, it's part of the image of Paris. I mean, short of the Eiffel Tower, it's along with the Eiffel Tower, it's one of those buildings that just defines the city and what it means to be Parisian. So it's, it's gut-wrenching. It really is.
It is. It is. And I think everyone deals with it in a different way. Either you've studied it in history books or you've actually had the honor of being there yourself in person to just stand, sit there and be in awe of it. I remember looking at on the facade, that rose stained glass window, and it's the intricacy and just the beauty of it, just that one little piece of it. And if you walk around, everywhere you look, there was something that was so magical in terms of what it looked like artistically, but what it also meant to the world. And that's the sad part.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's the energy that created this had to do with devotion, with yes. The religious devotion and the devotion to Mary. That's why they're called, that's why all these cathedrals are called Notre Dame, our mother. And so, it's, that's the energy that built these. That was the motivating force, that led, great engineers, architects, artisans to create these spectacular achievements, and to watch them go up in flames is really, really awful.
It's devastating. You're already seeing, though, the President Macron and even former President Barack Obama has spoken up to say it is it's history lost, but it is our nature to rebuild. I just wonder about the challenges of rebuilding something like this. You don't see buildings like this going up today in this modern age, and there must be reason for that.
Well, I mean, we can still build in a Gothic style. I mean, think about, in Chicago we have, the University of Chicago's Gothic buildings. Northwestern has Gothic buildings. But there's an authenticity that comes from age and the accumulation of weather and events and the energy that goes into, creating a monument like this. That's partly that devotion that I was talking about. The last, if there is a rebuilding, of course you don't want the Disneyland version of Notre Dame. At the same time, Notre Dame has been renovated in the past. The French, in some ways, I think, I'm not an expert on French history, but I think the building fell out of favor during the French Revolution. The statues of kings were actually beheaded. And then in the 19th century, I'm told, a new wave of appreciation led to the cathedral being renovated. Right. And as recently as 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, 2012, there was a story that Reuters put out that the cathedral had been renovated in advance of its 850th anniversary. So it's just to be discussing renovation is like mind-boggling, a rebuilding. And it's a fraught issue because, how do you make it authentic? I mean, I can't even get my arms around that, much less around what's happening right now.
Right. It's hard to bring your head there, even though it might be a positive. You can see why the French leaders are delivering that message to the people. You can only imagine how they might be feeling today. You saw some people come to the flames, and there's a picture on CNN of this old man just crying, bursting into tears.
Oh.
It's very visceral. And,
of course,
this idea of potentially somehow, some way rebuilding maybe is of some comfort to people. But Blair Kamen, we certainly appreciate your time on a day like this. Sad day for all of us, really. And thank you. Thank you for your perspective.
Well, thanks for having me on and, you know, for discussing it. And we'll hope for the best and pray for a miracle.
We will.
Thank you, Blair. Really
thanks.
Appreciate your insight. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Coming up, we have, what were we going to say?
There's a reason why Blair Kamen has a Pulitzer Prize for architecture criticism. He speaks with such eloquence. And even if I'm not interested in what he's writing about, by the time I finish the article, I always am. He's just a beautiful writer. Just,
and he,
you know,
educates
wonderful.
You at the same time.
The passion he has for architecture is just palpable, and I really appreciate his insight.
I do, too. I agree with you. Coming up top of the hour, we're going to see what's happening in the news. And for that, we head over to Kim Gordon.
And, of course, we'll bring you the latest on the massive fire burning at Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris.
Hey, keep listening after 4 p.m. for your chance to win a family pack of four tickets to see the Chicago White Sox take on the Baltimore Orioles at 7:10 on April 30th. Tune in every Monday afternoon during the 4 o'clock hour for another chance to win not one, not two, not three, but four tickets to a White Sox game.
Four?
Four tickets. That's the family pack.
We have just a minute here, but we got to check in with Lauren Lapka first here because she is fulfilling a childhood dream later today. This is huge.
I know. I get to deliver the game ball for my favorite baseball team for the White Sox tonight. So I hope people are going.
Is your family going?
Yeah, they get to go, so I'm very excited.
Oh, that's so cool. So you'll go out to home plate then, Lauren? Is that where you deliver the game ball?
You know what? This I haven't found out yet. I don't know if I just go and put it on the mound. I don't know if I'm giving a ball to whoever's throwing out the first pitch, but I don't think so,
because
it's possible they get that in the dirt, and then you'd have to get a new one anyway.
I bet it's going to go in the catcher's glove or the pitcher's glove, or maybe the umpire. Even that would be cool. Whatever it is, you're going to be on the field.
Yes.
Huge.
Yes.
Hallowed ground for you and your family.
Ugh.
And my family as well, as you know.
Uh-huh.
I'm really excited for it. Are you going to? And isn't it Star Wars night, too?
It is.
Oh my gosh.
What is the giveaway?
Get
do you know?
Out.
Well, I know they're doing a Chewbacca bobblehead, but only for certain areas. So
our own little Ewok is delivering the first ball.
Are you going to dress up in your Darth Maul costume?
No. I'm definitely wearing my Sox jersey.
Get your Sox jersey.
Okay. That's more appropriate.
I'm going to prepare for a lot of...
Oh, you got to listen. You got to layer up and put the jersey on top, kid. We got to see the famous White Sox jersey. I've already seen you when we went to the game a couple weeks ago. So
that
I'm excited.
Is awesome. We know you have to leave the show early, but I want to make sure we talk about it.
That's cool.
It is cool. Tom Skilling will be joining us in just a few minutes here, but let's check in with Kim Gordon, get the news here at the top of the hour in WGN. It's the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Richard Roper is in for Ro today. He's taking another couple of days off.
Sleeping on a cot in an airport somewhere, trying to get back like John Candy and Steve Martin in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles right now.
He got snowed, right?
I don't see Ro sleeping on a cot anywhere.
That's so
Where's
true.
The Four Seasons? Good point, Kim.
Chauncey, I'll leave the bags. I'll be staying an extra day.
Yes, sir, Mr. Howell.
Yeah, he travels in style, Ro does.
A lot of people, though, did get stranded wherever they were. It wasn't about the weather where they were. It was about the delays here that basically pushed a lot of flights back a day for a lot of people.
Something like 1,000 cancellations, which you don't see
crazy.
All the time. But then again, you don't see an April snowstorm quite like that, Tom Skilling, very often, do you?
No, that's right. That's right. We looked and found that only 3% of April days beyond the 14th the 14th or beyond, have had measurable snow. So this is rare.
Really rare.
And it tied for the heaviest April 14th snow on the books around here.
What was the accumulation officially, Tom?
5.4.
No kidding.
5.4.
I mean, that's a legit storm.
Yeah, that really is.
Really
is. It was up to 8 inches as you went out north and west. So, it was definitely a legit storm.
Tom Skilling's weather is sponsored by Permaseal Basement Systems.
Darn right it is.
Get that in there before we got any further.
You know, Tom, we were talking to your friend Joe Donnellan recently, earlier on the broadcast, because he was in South Bend and coming back.
Yeah.
And I was in Champaign-Urbana for the weekend for the Roger Ebert, you know, the Ebert Fest, the annual film festival.
Sure.
And it was actually lovely down there. A little bit of rain, you know.
Yeah.
But Sunday, I left around, I want to say, about 11 a.m., Tom. And I learned that Champaign-Urbana, same time zone as we are. Who knew? So this was also same as Chicago time.
Yeah.
But I'm coming up by 57. And as you know, it's 70-mile-an-hour speed limit for a while there. So you're cruising along 75-ish, you know, dry roads. And then a little bit of a rainstorm. And then by the time we were getting close to Kankakee, I mean, I literally saw it change to a snowstorm coming at you. And as great a job as they do on the Illinois roads, you know, there was nobody out there yet plowing because it was just happening. And Tom, I saw vehicle after vehicle spinning out, and you could see you could see the passengers in trucks and cars with their windshield wipers going. They were still in their cars waiting for aid. And we slowed down finally to 20 miles an hour, Tom, on I-57. And then the navigation actually said, you know, advised us to kind of, I ended up taking like Stager Road and Wolf Road and things like that. And I kept thinking, well, now at least if I spin out, I can go to the Gunderson farm down the road there or the, you know, hi, it's me, your friend Rich.
You know, it's
funny. But it was pretty treacherous, terrible, I have to say.
Oh, it was terrible. It really was. And the big wet flakes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the amazing thing is it overcame temperatures that were really only marginal for, accumulating snow and wet, warm ground on top of it. But it came down so darn fast. By the way, we had thunder snow with this as well.
Yes. Now, where was that witness? Because I was in New Buffalo, and we didn't get much snow at all. I was there for the weekend. There wasn't much snow there. But the thunder snow, my friends were all saying, and everyone, social media was lighting up.
Yeah, I didn't see any personally, but it was all over, Tom?
Oh, yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I heard it in the city 4 or 5 times.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm looking now. I remember Frank Wachowski.
That's crazy.
Observed it at Midway Airport from 12:45 to 1:15. But my colleague, Mark Carroll here, let me see. I put this up on Facebook this morning. I'll pull down the locations of this if you give me just a second.
Sure. Yeah.
It was quite interesting. Let me see. I don't have it.
And the thunder snow reminder for us is when you hear the thunder, but instead of the rain, you have the snow.
Well, you know, yes, indeed. Mm. And it's a sign of extreme dynamics. In other words, the air is being lifted very, very profusely by the jet stream and the storm itself. And so you get this mix of charges in the clouds that produces the lightning discharges.
It's kind of awesome, but a little bit
scary,
disturbing,
isn't it?
Unsettling, I would
unsettling.
Say. Well, and Tom, you know, I think you know that back in college, I danced for 2 years under the name Thundersnow.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I had a costume that was kind of, you know, part meteorologist, part abominable snowman. Made some good
geeky,
tips back in the day.
No,
well, hey, look, you know, you got to dance.
Kim's got a question about Thundersnow, and I bet a lot of people have questions about Thundersnow.
Yes. So, Tom, we heard this Thundersnow, and at first we didn't think it was actual thunder because it sounds different than normal thunder. It almost sounded like a truck going over a bridge kind of a sound, and we didn't know if it was the buildings that we were in or if thundersnow has a different sound.
It probably does for a lot of folks, and the reason for that is the snow itself kind of muffles the thundersnow. Here are the reports, by the way. Midway thundersnow, 12:34 it was first noted out of Midway Airport. O'Hare reported distant lightning at 12:51 yesterday. DuPage, West Chicago, in other words, DuPage County Airport, reported distant lightning around 12:35 to 12:52. Joliet reported distant lightning to the south at 9:35 to 10:55. Ooh. And Lansing had lightning around 9:55. And southeast of the station at 12:35. Lightning, by the way, the snow usually drives people inside. But that can be, damaging and also injurious. There have been people injured. There were four kids sledding in Caribou, Maine, that were struck by lightning. There was a transformer knocked out over in the UK by thunder snow.
Well, listen. So there was a guy named me who was in Orland Park shoveling his mother's driveway on a Monday morning. Didn't expect me doing that in April, Tom.
No.
You're a good son. I think the Masters kept a lot of us indoors, and then the Game of Thrones anticipation, too. It was hard to schedule much on the Sunday if you're interested.
And not only that, Richard, I hope you were careful. I hope everybody else was who was doing that, too, because this was real heart attacks.
I was. I do like 10 minutes, and then I really do. And then take a little break and just admire my handiwork.
Yeah.
Hope that the neighbor next door didn't notice that a little of the snow is now in his driveway.
Yeah.
You know, the usual.
Sure. Well, you know, this snow had about twice the water content.
It was heavy. It was very heavy.
Very heavy.
As you mentioned, because I remember yesterday when I was driving up, the temperature indicator, it was right around 31, 32 degrees when that snow started hitting. So it was, right as you mentioned, right on that edge of rain and snow.
Well, you know, thunder snow was first noted back in 1099. Chinese warriors used to think of the time that thundersnow was a precursor to enemy attacks. And there's been
a
study.
That's kind of cool, actually.
There was a study back in 1971 that found that only 0.07% of snowfalls in the country have included lightning. So it's not
wow,
a
wow, it really
phenomenon.
Is a rarity. Okay,
but yeah, but I would suspect a lot of people have seen it.
Now listen, Tom.
Yeah.
Tom Skilling, legend,
yeah.
Icon. Mm-hmm. Meteorologist to the stars. Is that it for snow for the spring? Are we done?
You know, I don't see any coming in the near term. But, you know, you can get a little bit of sticking snow into May. I would think the big sticking snows are probably over.
Listen to me, Tom.
Yeah.
The Mickey Mouse Parade in November. Uh-huh. That's the next time I want you to be talking to us right here
not
on the Rocon Show with Anna DeVantis about snow. The Mickey Mouse Parade.
Gotcha.
Okay?
Of course, it'll be helpful that you get to be in your bathing suit this week at some day if you want to.
Well, you know, it's really, these temperatures going to gyrate all over the place. We got a nice warm day tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Later in the day, the wind will turn off the lake. You'll feel that downtown and on the beaches. Then it starts chilly and raw with a wind off the lake Wednesday morning. But by evening, the wind will have turned south, will shoot up into the low 70s, carry 70 into Thursday, then much cooler Friday, but Easter Sunday weekend looks like it's going
to
warm
good.
Up on
good
Easter Sunday, 70s then.
And any precip, any rain expected for that day?
Not Easter. There is rain expected and some scattered thunderstorms Wednesday morning, and during the day Thursday, there'll be some waves of showers and thunderstorms. Probably won't be an all-day rain, but they'll be in the area. And then a few little showers on Friday. We're watching a storm that's to lift up later in the week south and east of us. If it comes a little farther west, we might get some rain on Friday, but we've thrown in a shower for good measure, even though I think...
Just a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Tom, very quickly, what's your favorite color peeps?
My favorite color peeps. Uh-huh. You know what? It's funny. My roommate brought back some pink ones, and I don't know why he chose that. Probably the only ones, but they were kind of attractive.
Good answer.
Is that right?
Did you grow up with the peeps, Tom? Did you have those in your Easter basket growing up?
You know, I don't remember peeps. I of course remember the colored eggs and coloring.
Yeah, the hard boiled eggs. Those are fun.
Coloring them. That was a lot of fun. Yeah, yeah.
And the Easter egg hunts. Those are fun.
Yeah, too. That was fun too. Where they were hidden around the house, and you know, you had to figure out where your parents had put them. How about you guys? Did you grow up with peeps?
Yeah.
I loved peeps.
Yeah, and I think it's a local company that does those, too.
That sounds right.
In Elsip, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, they're all over the place now, Tom. They got orange and yellow and purple and pink and fantastic. And the dentists of America really appreciate those peeps.
My daughter did a deal with the dentist.
Oh,
no gummies and no peeps except
good.
For on Easter.
Okay.
She's allowed to have them then.
All right.
Yeah. And because they're really kind of, they're not good for the teeth, you know?
No.
You're really not. They just stick on there, and even after you brush them sometimes, there's still remnants of
them.
A week later. You're still tasting the peep.
Oh, yeah.
True.
Yeah, they're good for the bacteria that go after your teeth, you know. But, you know, so if you want to feed some bacteria, eat some peeps.
Yes.
You know, yeah.
I guess it's the good stuff always.
They are good.
Mm.
I actually snuck one the other day. I don't know why they were brought home, to tell you the truth. But I saw them sitting out, and, you know, that's always dangerous.
Yeah,
put
that's true.
Any form of food or candy out on the table, you know. I do it as a public service.
Good
know.
Job. I brought home, actually, for folks this weekend, some of the Game of Thrones Oreos that are out there with and there's no endorsement, by the way, Oreos. You can call me if you like. But, they have special Game of Thrones Oreos.
By the way,
Oreos,
you were mentioning transplants and automobiles. You know that I did an audio track for that?
Yes.
I did not.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Absolutely.
Tom, what did you do?
Well, you know, when Steve Martin was in, Kansas City, calling home to find out, I did the, his wife was listening to the radio and had WGN radio on in the background. And so I remember taping it upstairs here. The bit was that the airport was opening and we were announcing it on GN radio in the morning, and it was on in the background. Very easily missed as it was by.
No, you could. It's you, but it, no. You can hear it. I recently watched it last year. Did a screening of it. And
yeah,
I'm like, oh, that's Tom.
There's
you
Tom
can hear
Skilling.
It, especially next time people watch it. Check
and
it
then
out.
Eddie Schwartz and I were on a class. Remember that one with Jacqueline Bisset?
Yeah, young that's, Andrew McCarthy and Rob Lowe.
Yeah, he was studying in his dorm room and had Eddie on in the background in the radio.
Yes, he was saying.
Yeah.
Eddie, the great legendary.
We did. They took some bit that we were talking and put it in there. So
very cool.
How many others have you been in, Tom? A lot of other movies?
You know what? What is it? Couples Retreat did a little, they took a TV clip off that.
And then, of course, I believe Nicolas Cage followed you around for The Weatherman, actually.
Oh, right.
Which is actually kind of a crazy movie, but really interesting because Nicolas Cage plays a Chicago weatherman, and people throw things at him when the forecast is wrong.
Frosties. I remember thinking when I heard about that, Richard, I hope that doesn't catch on.
Yeah, thank God.
Thank God it didn't. So all you need is to walk down the street and have a frosty planet.
And the funny thing is, when they filmed The Weatherman here, they actually had a cart in artificial snow because it was one of those winter couple of weeks where they couldn't get it to snow.
They had a
Wabash and Lake there.
They filmed it at the NBC studio when I was there on the weekends. Right. Because they had a Telemundo set that wasn't in use on a weekend, so they could totally take over the entire set for the entire weekend. And I remember that it was only like feet away from us where we were producing the newscast, and some people had trouble not staring.
That was fake news. You were real news.
Well, you know what's interesting? Gore Verbinski was the director for that.
Who did Pirates of the Caribbean, among other films down the road. Yeah,
and he spent with his people a number of weekends in this office.
Yeah.
They came in and they wanted to know why this is back in the era when we had maps hanging on the walls. And you wanted to know, now, why do you have this one year and this? And it was amazing to watch, his production team go through.
He's a perfectionist.
He is. And what a nice guy. I'd never really talked to a Hollywood director. You do that all the time, Richard. But it was a lot of fun. And they brought a whole truck out here and fed the crew. And a semi-truck with all the wardrobe in it was parked out here on Bradley Place.
Cool. It's exciting. You know, you see that. You think about the economic value to our city and the impact of how we've seen such a surge. And I see a movie trailer, or actually more for the TV shows like Chicago PD, Chicago Fire, and Chicago Met.
Dick Wolf shows.
Everywhere. Those shows, it's just so cool to see. And I met a friend of mine from Lane Tech who is in the neighborhood in the West Loop shooting for Chicago Fire. He is a costume guy now.
Wow.
And he said, it is so cool because I really haven't had to leave my hometown in 7 years. I've found work here without having to go somewhere else.
That's really cool.
And he was just so thankful. So,
yeah. It's a fascinating thing, and you really realize how serious they are about trying to replicate the real world that they're doing in fantasy style.
Tom, we got to move on here because we've got to have some things to do here, but I will just very quickly, that warm-up that people are waiting for, when is that going to happen?
Well, it's warmer today. It's lovely
out
there.
It'll be
warmer tonight, and tomorrow we'll get up well into the 60s to near 70. Late in the day, it'll turn cooler, but the warmth will be back late Wednesday. So, if you blink and miss it, it'll be back later Wednesday and last into Thursday and come back Easter again after a break on Friday.
Thank you, Tom.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tom. Talk to you tomorrow.
Good to talk to you guys. Have a great Monday.
You too.
Okay.
Okay, listen, guys. Check it out right now. Be caller number 19. That's caller number 19 at 312-981-7200 to win a family pack of four tickets to the Chicago White Sox versus Baltimore Orioles game is at 7:10 on April 30th. Tune in every Monday afternoon during the 4 o'clock hour for another chance to win four tickets to a White Sox game.
You got it. Good luck. Good luck. That was a lot of enthusiasm on that. We are going to check in with a tax expert coming up, because did you file your taxes? Did you get a return, or did you see on the screen that you were getting a return that was lower than you thought? Some people are running into this. In fact, some people are actually taking it out on their accountant. It's not your accountant's fault. We have a tax expert a tax reporter who covered this issue from the Chicago Tribune. Talk to us about that. That's coming up here on WGN. But first, let's check in with Kim Gordon, find out what's happening at the bottom of the hour in the news.
Anna, prayers have been answered in Paris.
It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. Richard Roper in with us today. Good to see you, Rich.
Thanks, Anna. A little tax man, Mr. Thief, I believe, right there.
Did you pay the tax man?
Is that Rockford's own Cheap Trick?
Nicely done. So you might not have liked the refund you received this year, because refunds actually were slightly lower this year. And you hear a lot of people complaining about it, but don't blame your accountant. And you might not even be able to blame the new tax law, because there's a lot of reasons why that might have happened, including government withholding. You may have received more than you thought. But we want to get to the bottom of it. And our guest is Robert Chanik, Chicago Tribune business reporter. And he wrote an article today about don't take it out on your accountant, Robert. Are people doing that? Is that what you're finding?
Well, actually, wrote that back in March, and they were already beating up on their accountants back then. So it's funny. I just checked the current stats, and it holds up. People are getting less, and fewer people are getting refunds this year.
But part of that is, explain what's going on behind that, because their average refund is down slightly. Part of that, though, is due to the fact that with government withholding was less this year. So you did get a little more in your paycheck, maybe not enough to really notice, and there's that also happening for some taxpayers.
Yeah, well, I said the withholding, you know, tables were changed as part of the new tax law. And again, one of the ways it's shaking out is they were trying to make it more accurate as part of this sort of revamp. So what does that mean that when as accounts will tell you, if you get a big refund check, that means the government's been holding on to your money all year and you're not charging them interest. So it's not really such a great thing to get that big refund check. Mm. But
there is something psychological about it, though, when you get the big refund.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, all of us, when we've gotten
people
them,
earmark it for something,
do.
The
you're
vacation
like,
or paying off this bill. Or
you
whatever,
make a big purchase that you otherwise wouldn't have, or you pay off something you needed to get rid of, and it feels good because you might not have saved that money.
But Robert makes a great point. We're being, being grateful for getting our own dough back,
Exactly. And there is it's a good feeling. It's kind of forced savings, but it still felt good to open up the mailbox and see a big
check.
Absolutely. And by the by, one of the things I was thinking is I'm still seeing it. It's a little bit tone deaf, but there's a lot of advertising around, what are you going to do with that refund check?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and for those people who didn't get one this year, it's kind of rubbing salt
rubbing
level,
their face.
Like,
Robert, can I ask you something, Robert, too? After President Trump took office and we saw the then Speaker Paul Ryan give these examples that maybe sometimes backfired about how, this working person was going to get. Has any of that actually taken effect, or is that still just out there in the ether?
The idea that people,
they were saying that working class people were going to get a break under the Trump administration. They were putting out there that they working class people were going to see more.
I think they did see, for the most part, slightly bigger paychecks, if you remember, that when that kicked in. Most people saw, after the adjustments, a slight bump in their paycheck. Mm-hmm. And experts say, and again, you have to put that against other beneficiaries, like very wealthy people, and particularly the corporations that got a huge cut as well as part of that. So it's kind of small, maybe, in comparison to the big corporations that I think have done extremely well and done a lot of stock buybacks and so forth. But for the average person, I think most people will say they're probably coming out slightly ahead in terms of the dollars, but I'm not sure how much it feels like it when, you see the small increase in your paycheck, and then for a larger number of people, you don't see any refund at the end of the year. So I don't think people are feeling super good about it.
Not at this time
from
of
a
year.
Paycheck standpoint. Yeah, yeah.
630, we have a texter. Can someone please explain to the general public your tax return means nothing? Look at what you paid last year compared to this year and see what happens. Is that a good judge based on if you didn't really have a big salary increase? Is that a good way to go about it?
Conceivably. I mean, you have to look, and again, what did you net out at the end of the year? And accountants will say that generally people, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but come out slightly ahead under the new laws. But again, it's paid out weekly, and end of the year, not so much. And frankly, as I said, I was just looking at the current stats. It's pretty startling. What was the number? The total refunds are down in terms of the amount by like $6 billion year to date.
$6 billion year to year.
Year to date. And the average refund, it's small. It's like that's 1.1% on average right now, about $34. But, you have, hundreds of thousands of fewer, actually, it looks like 2 million almost, fewer refunds sent out so far. And small amounts, I say, but for some people, it tips them over from refund to owing taxes, which is what we saw the greatest frustration that,
That was in your article, I believe. Like, people thought, wait a minute, this can't be right. Usually I get a refund, and sometimes it's pretty sizable. And this year, look at what's happening. I owe the IRS, and for the first time, some people found themselves in that situation.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We talked to a few accountants, and they said breaking that news was very hard, after year after year, you're getting a refund. And again, it doesn't mean you're worse off, but it sure feels like it when you suddenly have to write a check in April rather than receive one.
Right. Psychologically, I do think there is something to that. When you're used to getting one and you're used to doing something with that money,
absolutely.
It's sort of like a savings plan that you just sort of
It's like back
on.
In the days, there was something known as the holiday bonus that employers would
back
give to
day.
Employees. You would get it. Remember that? Remember those days,
Richard,
Robert?
Why don't you explain to the kids what that is?
I'm trying to remember.
National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Chevy Chase was
voting
for that bonus.
Right. Yeah, it turned ugly. I remember that.
It used to happen. So in terms of moving forward, the President Trump's 2017 tax law, and we are feeling really for the first time that impacting us at this tax season, is coming forward, though? Is it going to be even more of an impact, or is this it?
I think from a paycheck standpoint, this is it. I believe, and I haven't followed it super closely since the article, that there's going to be some more tweaking of the withholding this year, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, again, if it's any comfort to somebody who is used to getting that check and had to write a check, that if they look at, as your emailer or texter said, you know, what did they net at the year? What was the gross? What was the net? For most people, they still probably came out ahead. It's just a sort of rebalancing of do you get the money week by week or do you get it a year after you've earned it, which is what the refund really is.
Requires doing math, and that's not fun, I think, but look into it and you can see how you stand. We appreciate your time, Robert. Robert Chanik, Chicago Tribune Business Reporter. Thank you so
much. My pleasure.
Happy tax day. We want to talk at Game of Thrones. A billion people around the world viewed this. Just that music gets you, doesn't it? Record viewership. And,
I believe at one point, Tiger Woods rode a dragon. That was the most exciting crossover ever.
There was a double dragon
while wearing
date.
A green jacket. There was a double dragon
date. It
was
pretty cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll talk about that a little bit on the other side. And then the Never Throners. You know, one of those in your family? The one who's like, I'm never watching it. I can't catch up. I'm not going to bother. But I think...
Yeah, we locked them out of the house.
You got to. Yeah, because you can still catch up. You may want to. Because this season, this final season, looks seriously pretty amazing.
Yep.
Let's break here and we'll be back with more of the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis, coming up. But first, let's check in with Kim Gordon and see what's coming up top of the hour in the news.
Anna, a roller coaster of emotions today in the streets of Paris after the fire at the Notre Dame Cathedral.
Your mother was Lyanna Stark. And your father, your real father, was Rhaegar Targaryen. You've never been a bastard. You are Aegon Targaryen, true heir to the Iron Throne.
Ooh, he didn't mention you're sleeping with your aunt.
I'm so shocked they kind of gave out that information in the first episode. I thought they were going to sit on that.
Seriously, you did. I did too.
They don't have a lot of episodes to mess around.
True.
Remember, I told you guys last week, I said every single episode is going to have major reveals, huge confrontations. You're going to see some major characters are not going to make it to the last episode also. That's just the way it goes. 17-plus million official viewers on HBO. We know more people probably watched it through other methods, and
that's
shame
true.
On you if you did that. But it's the most watched television show in HBO history. Also, the most watched scripted program of any kind this year. I think there was an episode of like Big Bang Theory that did 13 or 14 million. So this, and we're talking about a premium service. A lot of people signed up the week before. HBO loves and knows that you're going to do that. I know some people that did that just hadn't had HBO for 2 years.
And then if you were lucky enough to be a DirecTV customer, I guess they leaked it by accident.
By accident,
at 3 o'clock
they pushed
in the
it
afternoon.
Out in the middle of the afternoon and said it was a pure error. But I'm sure there'll be some conversations between the HBO legal team and some of the folks there about that. That's
you think?
Kind of a big faux pas. And, you know, we've also had these conversations, guys, about, you know, spoiler alerts and all that. And as a movie critic, I hate it, actually, to tell you the truth, when other movie critics will tweet out something 3 weeks in advance and say, oh, I got to see Star Wars before everybody else, and it's amazing. I'm like, I'll wait till it's closer to, you know, and then we'll talk about it here.
Uh-huh.
And I try not to give away a lot in the review.
You're so good at that. You make me want to
really
watch
hard.
It if it's a good film, but you don't. And I remember there are some movies like Get Out when it first came out. It was difficult to describe because how do you not explain that dramatic turn of events?
Everything that's going to happen. But, and even with these Game of Thrones episodes, I don't think you need in real time to say right then. But to me, event television, like a Game of Thrones and other series like that, It's just like Tiger in the Masters. You have to watch it in real time. You have to be realistic and realize that your feeds are going to be filled with people talking about it. So don't complain to me. There's no, I give a grace period of 24 to 48 hours for most episodic television.
Okay, that's fair.
Not when it's totally event fair. TV like this. This is the same as the Super Bowl, the Oscars, anything else that people are watching in real time. If you don't like it, get off my feed, because we're going to talk about it.
It was difficult to even like plan the Sunday, and these are real big first world problems. But if you're watching the Masters, and that, I mean, I didn't get off the couch practically. And then Game of Thrones was just a couple hours later, and I did want to watch it in real time for that very reason. Plus, I just couldn't wait.
Yeah. And oh, there was a great bridge on 60 Minutes. Anderson Cooper did an amazing report. If you get a chance, folks, if you love the show, Game of Thrones, go on their website. They have it. Anderson Cooper did this thorough wonderful reporter. He went to some of the filming locations. He showed some of the Game of Thrones tours. And then in one of the great moments in television, they made Anderson Cooper into a White Walker. The full makeup for 4 hours. And I think he should run for vice president as Anderson Cooper White Walker. Something tells me that like we're going to see him in that. I think he really enjoyed being a White Walker.
Did we see the White Walker in this episode? I don't remember, other than in the preview.
There was some stuff with that. Can I just say this?
Yes.
You guys let me know what you think about this too. And I love the show, but I did find it particularly soap opera-y yesterday's episode, last night's episode. The big reveal about Jon Snow's parentage, Samwell finding about what happened with his brother. And even, you know, it used to be a bawdier series. And you know, Cersei...
Yeah, she's not even sleeping with a relative
well,
anymore.
Well, now she... But she welcomes this guy into her bedroom, and then we cut to the aftermath like we're watching General Hospital
I know. And he's not even a relative.
And he's like, how did I do? And she's like, you weren't... You know, she goes, you're the most arrogant man I've ever met. That's not a bad thing. But it was very soap opera-y with all the reveals. And then we had the two... The learning how to ride a dragon
thing. The double dragon date.
Which was like a Katherine Heigl movie where they were taking hot air balloons. And he says, like, you know, what do I hold on to? Whatever you can, you know. How do you learn how to...
Here's the thing about that, though. As cheesy as it was, I think it was important. Because now if you think ahead to this war that's about to happen, it's good to have two generals on your most powerful...
Look at this one here. That's true.
You know,
Lauren's an astute observer of these things. Knowing with her Star Wars history, she knows when get to the battle scene, you want your lead characters on the dragon because that's important. I did think it was a little cheesy in that moment, though, when she's like, "Get on my dragon, okay, and I'll get on mine." And it's like when you see those horseback riding on the beach moments, and the music plays, the music bed plays. It's like,
remember
this is our time when we're really connecting.
When Christopher
as a couple.
Reeve took Margot Kidder in the first Superman. You know, can you read my mind? And they do the flying. So. Listen, they had to let people know, but a lot of the family reunions, and it was very soap opera-y, which it's always, look, everything is, Shakespeare's a soap opera, but in this episode in particular, there was a lot of family reunions and reveals and, you know, romantic interludes, and, you know, we need some stabbing and some chopping and some heads flying next Sunday.
They are preparing, though.
Absolutely.
Gearing up for a battle of all battles. Can't you just feel it? I mean, I can't wait. I agree with you. There are moments there where you're like, wait a minute.
I felt like they had to get things
moving quickly.
Yeah, it was. It was the PG version of Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm. Did you like it, Lauren? Are you a big Game of Thrones fan?
Yes, I liked it because I understood there's a lot they need to get through. And knowing that, I think I read all the breakdowns of how long each episode was. This is the shortest.
That's true.
54 minutes, and then it's like 58. And then we start getting to an hour and like 28 and an hour and 20. So it's like, okay, let's get all of this out of the way. Mm-hmm. Let's just get there. And again, you were waiting for the reunions. It's a little less... It doesn't impact you as much when they're all kind of happening at once.
I think that's what it was. And
that's true.
And the writing's always been really, really great. The two guys who created the show, David Benioff is one of them, who's done a lot of great movies too. They're brilliant writers, and they've put together this incredible jigsaw puzzle over all these years. I guarantee you they knew that they probably were saying, look, this is not going to be a Red Wedding memorable level type of episode, but we got to do this. And sometimes you have to set the stage, as Lauren's saying, like, get everybody in place where they should be, like, everybody back in your places, like, let's run this play from the start. You know, it's been 2 years, and then we're going to get the excitement and I think some really shocking twists and turns.
Yeah, that 2 year hiatus, you're right, it's like we've waited this long. It didn't disappoint, though. I didn't think.
It was still, look, you know, not great. Game of Thrones is still better than 95% of the TV out there, and we still had a lot of great humor, like where the eunuch says to Tyrion, how come I can't make fun of your height, but you can make fun of me? And he goes, because you don't have any.
they always throw them in there, and they're sort of like, sometimes you miss them because you're just so concentrating on the magnitude of the moment. Everything's going on, but great dialogue. Great, great dialogue.
Yeah.
You had mentioned before something, Richard, that I think is important, because there are people who feel like, I've never watched Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. I know it's got to be really cool or this many people or wouldn't be talking about it, but how do you catch up when you've got that many hours to
Well, I know a lot of people who watched it from the start and then rewatched every episode leading up to it, but I think, Lauren, you might agree with me too. With a show like this, first of all, you should watch it from the start. But yeah. I surrendered around season three and just accepted the fact that I wasn't always going to know every single thing that was happening and who was doing what to whom and let it just wash over you. Because there's going to be a moment where you're like, wait a minute, who's that again? We haven't seen that guy for four seasons.
Way too much to keep track of.
Well, and you said you could see the first season alone, and that sort of sets up the characters at least. You learn quite a bit from sort of the foundational level of who everybody is.
But even if you jumped in yesterday, you'd have a lot of questions, but you'd already have a pretty good idea of who you want to trust, who you want to root for, who's evil, and who said she was pregnant and is now drinking red wine again.
Again,
so what's that about? Maybe she lied about that pregnancy.
She is.
They didn't know back then.
Well, she stopped drinking at the end of the last season because she said she was pregnant.
Which is
weird.
Yeah. It is weird.
She did not know.
I have to say, I actually like her the best, even though she's pure
she's
evil
so
and
evil.
Conniving and wonderful. If I could spend one day with one character, I would Cersei, number one, Tyrion, number two.
It's like I want her to die, but I don't want her to die.
I'd like to date Cersei if she lived in real life.
There's
I know I wouldn't last more than 6 months, but what a 6 months it would be.
She's executed men for less, I believe.
Yes,
one of her lines from last night.
You know, it's inevitable anyway, so let's get it done with a queen.
Top five of five, you won't believe, coming up. Woo! Coming up also, the stories that matter with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN. It's the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. Richard Roper sitting in for Ro today. He's taking a couple days off. He got snowed in. That whole, or at least the snow affected his travel plans, as it did many people's.
Yep, he's held up, but he'll be here eventually. We will not give up on you,
back.
Ro. We will find you.
We miss you, but he'll be back very soon, I believe, on
cool.
Wednesday. So that's,
cool.
that's okay, all happening.
That's the plan.
And I'm sure he's listening right now because he's missing this very special time of the day that we all look forward to. And you know it. You know what time
it's the top five on the Ro Khan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeBlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right, checking in at
number five.
Sophia Ferrero, a Naperville jewelry designer, and her husband were walking along the Seine River in Paris when they turned a corner and saw the massive fire at the iconic Notre Dame Cathedral. How about that? Historic 12th century cathedral caught fire just before 7 p.m. local time. Started about, what is it, like 10 o'clock this morning, our time. As ashes and embers blew onto bystanders and the streets, police removed the bystanders. Mm. They told them to stand back from the riverfront. Ferrero described then for us what she saw.
We're watching, and there was a young girl in front of us who turned around to take a selfie, and she was smiling. And this young Parisian girl, it was so sad, this young Parisian girl kind of taps her on the shoulder, and she's like, do you realize that this is a symbol for the French people? Please don't take a selfie. And the young girl, I think, felt, I don't think she really understood the gravity of the situation. Mm.
Yeah, it. Unless it was early on when it did, it was being reported really early on by just some smoke and smoldering. It very much seemed like it could be, you know, gotten under control. But obviously,
general rule: cathedral of any kind, iconic or otherwise, on fire, no selfies. How about that?
I think that is a good general selfie rule. We have a bonus cut, guys. Okay, here's one more from the Naperville couple.
This young girl, Eva, I like turned to talk to her, and I started talking to her, and she just burst out crying. There were people crying watching the flames because it really is this iconic symbol of Paris and of the French nation. And just to stand there, we felt helpless.
I mean, it's an architectural wonder. We were talking with Blair Kamen earlier from the Chicago Tribune, to say nothing of its religious significance and
significance to
the French people.
And this is, you know, just a local way of tying it in, and it fortunately wasn't nearly this tragic, but remember the Holy Name Cathedral roof fire about 10-ish years ago. Unfortunately, they were able to, firefighters were able to get to that before there was extensive damage, but even in Chicago, that was, you know, it's such a symbol of the city, regardless of your faith. You know, it's just a, you know, an identifying icon. And think of something that's been there for 800 plus years.
Right. Took nearly 200 years to build. And you think about the artifacts and all the things that inside of that building and the architecture outside. What's going to be saved? What can they save? I know they were trying. And a lot of people also said, let's talk about this, because coming up, we have a guest who's a firefighter who has special expertise in difficult structures to fighting fires. And I know a lot of people were second guessing what the French firefighters were doing. There are 400 of them at this site, and I think a half a world away, we got to understand that they want to save this cathedral. Let's not judge.
So you're saying that President Trump's plan might not be as sophisticated as the firefighters who are on the ground or the expert we're going to talk to? Is that what you're saying?
He put that plan out pretty early on Twitter. Here's what you need to do. And
dump some water. Just fly over and dump some water. We'll be good.
Yeah, I think
a little more complicated.
This was a very complicated one to fight. And we'll talk about that coming up. But let's check in right now at
number four.
The nation is in an uproar about the latest college admissions scandal. Some wealthy parents, we know what happened. They broke the rules, a lot of them, and the law, turns out federal law, and they spent a ton of money to try to make sure their children got into elite schools and universities. Jerry Brooks, a principal at an elementary school in Lexington, Kentucky, filmed the video of himself that has now gone viral after he explained how rampant cheating is in schools.
Michael Avenatti?
Oh, you're damn right, baby.
Wait, how do you know this fool? Well, I watch a lot of Morning Joe. I'm Team Meek.
That was Saturday Night Live.
That was
Pete Davidson. Oh, yeah. And Michael
I seen it in Fast Food with my child because it's their birthday. I know we're not supposed to, but I disagree with that school rule that we shouldn't be able to send fast food in for their lunches. You know who else disagrees with rules? Aunt Becky. And let me tell you how many times I've wanted to put a medal on a parent's neck at the science fair instead of on the child's. Because that parent said, oh, well, I really think we should be able to help our child in academics. And so I did a lot on this science fair project. You know who else thought they should be able to help their children in academics? Aunt Becky.
Taken down, Aunt Becky.
Aunt Becky, by the way, has pled not guilty, and her husband, Massimo Giannulli, to the cheating scandal. The feds say it was $500,000 that they donated to a fake charity. I mean, it seems as if there'd be plenty of records and, you know, financial records and otherwise, and plenty of evidence in this case that it would be difficult. In addition to the texts and emails, you know, money transfers, that kind of stuff.
So you say that guy's from Lexington, Kentucky. I could not tell by the accent at all. I thought, but he says he's from Kentucky, eh? Okay.
Well, Kim Gordon's from Kentucky.
I am. Can you tell I'm from Kentucky?
Well, let's listen to that guy
again.
Compared to you. Here's the Lexington, Kentucky guy.
Let's hear him.
We have a bonus cut, right?
Oh, yeah. I seen it in fast food with my child because it's their birthday. I know we're not supposed to, but I disagree with that school rule that we shouldn't be able to send fast food in for their lunches. You know who else disagrees with rules? Aunt Becky.
Aunt Becky. I love that.
That's because he's from Lexington. I'm from Louisville.
There's the difference. There you go.
Oh, my gosh.
That explains everything.
We know about them. We're going to take a break here. We have more of the top five and five coming up here. You got your three and your two and your one. But let's go to Kim Gordon and find out what's coming up bottom of the hour in the news first.
One of the world's most famous tourist attractions has been spared from fire.
Hey, you can watch for Chicago's very own Stories with Micah and Joe. That's Micah Mateer and Joe Donlin, weeknights on WGN-TV News at 9.
All right. We're in the middle of the top five at five, and it is time now to check in at
number three.
Tiger Woods. You know the guy. He won the Masters, his first major golf tournament win since the U.S. Open in 2008. The 43-year-old golfer says winning at Augusta National Golf Course and the club with his family present, well, makes his comeback all the more important.
That felt, you know, a little bit special, and then on top of that, to do it here at one of the most historic grounds there is. But as far as a comeback for me, yes, it was a pretty amazing comeback to get to where I'm at. I'm very fortunate to have had a procedure that alleviated the pain I was in. Now I'm just stiff, and maybe that's just being a little bit older, but I'm just so thankful to have had the opportunity to play at the elite level again, and to have won a couple tournaments, but also to have won a major championship since I come back is, and I'm gonna soak this one in for a little bit.
He deserves that. Is 43 old for a golfer at that major championship level?
Yeah, I mean, it is, but it's changing. Rich mentioned this at the top of the show when we were talking about it, how much sports science has changed the way golfers are. I mean, golfers, there was the stereotypical overweight guy out on the golf course. Now these are like elite athletes. They're all in super good shape. So Tiger's had the problems, but his back seems to be good to go. So who knows how much more time he's got.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, still hitting that ball with authority, that's for sure. Right?
It is. It's an amazing moment of redemption. I know the people on multiple sides of this, they think, well, you know, a lot of it's self-inflicted, the pain he caused upon himself. But I think that story it's pretty remarkable. And he certainly paid the price for a lot of those mistakes that he made. And good to see him back on top. The enthusiasm about golf, I mean, I can only imagine what's going to happen for every major going forward. Mm. It's pretty incredible. And the other thing is the BMW championship here at Medina, apparently it has relevance here because they host the people of the top 70 golfers, right, and he went from 81 to 13.
Yeah, that's part of the end of the year playoffs for the PGA Tour. So I expect he's won there before at Medina. That's nice. Going to be a lot of fun.
Could get on a roll. All right. Go, Tiger.
Give Kev a call when you're in town. Same number.
Yeah.
Same number.
Stay with me, Tiger. No problem.
Good party. Mm-hmm. You know him, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure, he'd love to.
You and Joe Donlin and Roe can all hang out.
Yeah.
Because you're buddies.
Force them together.
All of you.
Yeah.
All right. Checking in at
number two.
The thing that hurt the most was that I wasn't loved.
I decided to call my record Madame X.
I wasn't lost.
Who was that?
That's Madonna.
Oh!
Such a tease. The legendary pop star has announced her newest project, a record she has titled Madame X. She shared a video about it and a snippet of her new music as well on her official Instagram account. She did it last night.
Madame X is a secret agent.
I am Madame X.
Traveling around the world, changing identities, fighting for freedom.
Freedom.
Bringing light to dark places.
I bring light to dark places.
Madame X is a dancer.
I'm a dancer.
A professor. A head of state. A housekeeper. An equestrian. A prisoner. A student.
What? She's a housekeeper and an equestrian?
Maybe you need to see the video on that one. But that's Madonna. She's got a video, first album in 4 years for Madonna. Checking in, finally, at
number one.
Jail began to get crowded on Saturday Night Live over the weekend. The show skewered a number of recent high-profile arrests in a cold open featuring, you guessed it, Lori Loughlin, played by Kate McKinnon.
Son, I'm the craziest dude in here. Stabbed my neighbor to death and then ate his fingers so they couldn't ID the body.
Dang, that's insane.
Oh, yeah? You think that's insane? I paid $500,000 to get my daughter into USC.
You paid $500,000 for USC? What did your daughter major in?
Communication.
Oh.
And you know what her job is now? She's an influencer. On Instagram.
Stop it! I can't hear anymore. Guards, get her away from me!
Hey, I own the guards in here. I help their kids get into a really competitive pre-K.
Pre-K. You know, it's scary because I hear from friends in New York that competition for even pre-K in kindergarten schools and some of those schools gets to be so crazy, the pressures. But I had no idea, I will admit, that people were doing what they
were doing. Well, the very definition of stupidity, too, though, it's like her daughter, Olivia Jade, was making seven figures in communications as a YouTube influencer before she went to college. So what was the point of getting the communications degree? So she could get a job as an assistant on Two and a Half Men?
It's a great point, and that's why she's so mad at her mom now. She's like, wait a minute, I didn't even want to go to school.
That'd be like Zion Williamson's parents trying to get him into a good basketball school now.
None of it makes sense, does it? Sometimes is it more about the parents and the prestige they want to be able to say their kids going to the school?
Doesn't being Aunt Becky enough prestige for one life?
Well, we have a little more here. One more. Okay, we've got more people going to jail, of course. Okay. Mike Avenatti, remember him?
Sure.
Played by Pete Davidson. Here it is.
Michael Avenatti?
Oh, you're damn right, baby.
Wait, how do you know this fool?
Well, I watch a lot of Morning Joe. I'm Team Mika.
You're not a lawyer. What are you in here for? Speeding tickets?
Speeding tickets?
bitch, I'm accused of crimes you can't even conceive of. Like blackmailing a sneaker company and stealing taxes from a coffee shop to fund a race car team. And I'm so shady that a porn star once said that she needed to distance herself from me. And you know what the worst part is? I might still run for president. Avenatti Baldwin, 2020.
Remember for a minute he was running for president? We thought he was. Julian Assange, also played by Michael Keaton.
Yeah, you cheat your schools and, you know, you rob your companies. That's cute. It is.
Yeah.
I've attacked the U.S. military, bitches. Because I'm an actual James Bond supervillain. And I'm one step away from destroying the damn moon. So, you want to get nuts? Come on! Let's get nuts.
Okay, he wins. I yield my time.
Thank you. Is there a bathroom around here? Because I really have to take a wiki leak.
Dad joke.
Total dad joke. All right, let's wrap this thing up.
The top five at five.
Coming up here on the Rokan Show here with Anna DeVlantis and Richard Roper sitting in with us today. We've got a couple of interesting things I think you'll find. We want to talk to an expert firefighter, particularly a Chicago Fire Department veteran who has expertise in challenging structures and how to approach them. Because I think a lot of people have been asking questions as they watch this devastating images of Notre Dame in Paris burn. And just seemed to crumble into ruins, particularly when the spire crashed and how long it took to get water to the scene. There are reasons firefighters made the decisions they did, and there's been a lot of second guessing about what choices were made. He can explain why some of those choices were made. And I think that would be good to hear at
good
this
to
time.
Good to hear from an expert,
you're
absolutely.
You're halfway around the world, and you don't always understand exactly why they're making the decisions they are. No doubt about it, though. Devastating situation. We also just heard that Father Hurley will be checking in with us in the next half hour. He's the pastor at Old St. Pat's, the oldest church in Chicago that survived the Chicago fire.
Absolutely. Get his perspective from a man of faith and someone who has, is overseeing a Chicago landmark.
Because I think it's meaningful to anyone who just appreciates history and architecture around the world, but it's also a Catholic symbol, and it's Easter week.
Yep.
And there's this whole fact of, this whole idea of there being, Easter week is about rebirth and rebuilding, and you heard even the leader, Macron, already say that, President Macron, say it somehow, some way, we've got to figure out how to rebuild, and it seems remarkable to even think about that feat at this time, but maybe he knows the French people need to hear this. This is such a symbol for their country and their city, and it's truly devastating as we learn more and more about the relics and the things that are lost inside this beautiful piece of architecture. Thankfully, we haven't heard of any injuries, no firefighters injured, as they had 400 of them at that scene, battling what just looked like a nightmare to try to fight. You've got the scaffolding alone around that spire, 10 stories high.
Right.
How do you approach that? What do you do? And then the nature of all the wooden beams, they called it even the forest. They had acres of timber in the construction inside that church or that's at the cathedral, so that when the fire started, there
Once it started, it's
not a stone structure,
quickly,
a lot of wood in the interior. So we're going to ask about that and some of the challenges for firefighters as they tried desperately to save what they could. That's coming up here on WGN, but first let's head over to the news, and it is sponsored by PermaSeal Basement Systems. Here's Kim Gordon. This is the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Richard Roper in for Ro today, and we've been talking about the devastation at Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris as we've been watching the events unfold there. Everything is burning, is what the spokesperson for Notre Dame says. The spire has collapsed. Many people witnessed some of that as it happened a little earlier in the day. Just a tragedy out there. The entire roof has collapsed. They've tried to save as many relics as they can, and you think about what is inside, both outside the exterior, the architectural beauty and the treasures within that cathedral as well, to say nothing of what it means to the people of France and its significance emotionally in their hearts. But we want to understand also a little bit about, for Catholics, this cathedral and the significance of what this is, not only for the community it serves, but to the world who flock there from from everywhere to appreciate its beauty and attend Mass as well. Father Hurley of Old St. Pat's is joining us. Thank you, Father. We appreciate you checking in with us on this kind of a day. Devastating day, really, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, just a beautiful, beautiful symbol of, I think, even more just more than Catholicism. I mean, just a beautiful symbol of a house of worship. And to see the tragedy on TV is just incredible. It really is.
Father, you're absolutely right. I mean, and Old St. Pat's has a special place in Chicago's heart and history. We'll talk about that in a moment. Mm-hmm. But I think you make a great point. When I went to Notre Dame in Paris years ago, I went with a friend who was Jewish, who was absolutely overwhelmed and moved by the beauty and the faith and the power. It is, it is more than just a symbol of the, obviously it is of our faith, but of just spirit and persistence, the fact that this took two centuries to build, and it's really a symbol of, I think, hope and faith and a beacon of optimism for everybody around the world.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just it's more than just a work of art, but I mean, houses of worship, be they churches or mosques or cathedrals or synagogues, whatever, temples, I mean, throughout history, I mean, sacred spaces have been people's home, and so I just think to see your home go up in flames is it's just heart wrenching. It really is. It's part of people. It's part of a culture, and as well as part of a faith tradition. So it's really very disheartening to see that today.
It is, and we witnessed this on a very small scale here with Holy Name Cathedral and a fire there not long ago, and having a similar impact. People were upset, and this is a part of them and a part of their world. And just like they were describing that a part of Paris has died tonight, this is on a much grander scale because of the devastation and ruin there. But you still feel that a church community reacts to this kind of thing.
You really do. I mean, you can see it on, I've been watching the television all afternoon, and just to see people's reaction, I mean, the tears and the devastation, and not just those that you see on television, but certainly around the world. I mean, gosh, you hear the numbers of literally millions of people that go through Notre Dame on a yearly basis. I've been there too, and it's just a remarkable structure. And to think about the history, to think about the generations of families that built that place, over 200 years. It's just incredible, the dreams and the envisioning of what that place was meant to be, and meant to be just a beautiful sign of hope for people. And just reaching to the skies, this great Gothic structure, and to see it up in flames is truly a sad moment.
Well, it's a place of peace, too. And I remember just feeling, I went there as a college student when I was sort of backpacking around Europe and just stared at it. And I remember just being, and I'm sure this experience is not all that unique. You're in such awe when you can study it in history books, you can look at it in art history, whatever it is, it's this magnificent architectural treasure. But when you get there and you actually look at those stained glass windows, every piece of it was so ornate, such an artistic masterpiece that you're in awe of humanity, really, and the thing that it took 200 years to build, and what it might take to even try to repair what happened there. It's hard to think about.
When you think about 200 years, and you think about the handing on of the vision, so think about the artists and the sculptors who went into that place that weren't able to see their masterpieces completed, and yet they handed that vision on, and people carried that on. So I certainly, the president of France certainly is saying, hey, we're going to rebuild. But I mean, boy, you have to try to rebuild the vision and rebuild the beauty that, was created so many years ago.
I saw that.
I hope they can.
And you think it must be such an overwhelming task to think what you'd have to rebuild here, and the amount of the structure that has been ruined by this fire. And it just, I'm sure people of France want to feel that hope, and we all do, that will happen. It's a monumental task, to say the least. It's also Holy Week. And, you think about it, just yesterday, I would imagine there would have been a lot of people there for Palm Sunday, and this happened just after closing. So if there is any prayer answered here, I suppose it's that people weren't there inside, and that so far we haven't heard any reports of any firefighters or staffers or anybody nearby getting injured.
Right. Thank God for that. the irony of it happening during Holy Week is truly unreal. You're right. I'm sure yesterday that there were probably hundreds of thousands of people that went through those doors. Palm Sunday certainly does bring out a lot of people in churches to begin the holiest week of the year for Christians. And so for it to happen this week, I haven't quite put all the pieces together. I'm still reflecting on it, but it is kind of quite a strange irony that it happens this week.
No, well, Father, of course, you know, we are a relatively young country, and a young city compared to, you know, when we talk about the European cities. But Old St. Pat's has been a cornerstone of Chicago and Catholicism, and in particular, you know, Irish Catholics. The original structure, I believe, was on Randolph, but the current building with the famous kind of cream stone from Milwaukee, of course, I think has been there since the 1850s, right? So, I mean, there's a generational... Correct. You know, legacy there, and we know so many stories of couples that have met at the block party and weddings and everything. But I, you know, in terms of this week, I would imagine, you know, and of course, as you mentioned, you know, it's Holy Week, and Easter is, you know, the most glorious day of celebration in the faith. I would imagine that we'll be hearing mentions of Notre Dame in a lot of sermons, not just at Old St. Pat's, but around the Chicago area this week.
I would think so. I would think so. Yeah, Old St. Patrick's, we're just, you know, very blessed with having the oldest church building in the city.
It's just a great sanctuary. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It survived the Chicago Fire. It dates back to the first time the doors ever opened was Midnight Mass of 1856.
Wow.
Actually, the construction began, well, just taking it back, as you said, Richard, you know, the original church, a little wooden structure, began in 1846 and actually opened up on Easter Day of April 12th. So actually we just marked our anniversary last Friday, but that was the beginning of the parish of St. Patrick's. And then in 1853, the immigrants began the construction of the church that exists today, and it was completed. And the first time the doors opened was Midnight Mass of 1856. And people always say, has it always been called Old St. Patrick's? No, actually, it was St. Patrick's Church. But after the fire of 1871 in Chicago, the Great Fire, we survived it. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, then it was designated as Old St. Patrick's, because really it was part of the old city of Chicago.
Mm. Unbelievable.
Amazing.
Well, yeah. We really appreciate your perspective. Father Hurley from Old St. Pat's, thank you. It's a tough day, I know, and... it's just it's good to hear from you. So thank you. Thanks for checking in.
All right, Anna. Thank you, Richard.
Thanks, Father.
Take care. Bye bye.
Father Hurley, Old St. Pat's there. Good of him to take some time.
Good to
for
get
us.
That, you know, perspective.
It is. It is. It really
good,
is.
From the good Father.
And coming up, we have another perspective. A CFD battalion chief is going to join us to talk a little bit about the challenges for firefighters in approaching something like this. He'll be with us.
Excellent.
In just a little bit here, but we're going to check in with Kim Gordon here, find out what's happening at the top of the hour in the news first.
Anna, on this tax day, President Trump and Governor Pritzker touting their tax plans.
Been talking about the Notre Dame devastating fire, Notre Dame in Paris. And this is the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Richard Roper here with us today as Ro's taken a couple days off.
Right.
We were talking about firefighting and the response to this, because I think early on there was too much criticism of what were they doing without any much understanding necessarily about what firefighters confront when they go to something like this. Earlier in the morning, let's see, about 10 o'clock our time, it was starting to smolder. There was smoke, and we heard about that. And it seemed like, at least the early reports on like CNN and that kind of thing, were that it didn't seem that big, but it quickly, quickly moved. And we've all seen the devastation since. Battalion Chief from Chicago Fire Department, Steve Little, is joining us. He's got some expertise in these matters. And Steve, we really appreciate you taking some time to talk with us.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
Tell us what you saw as you were looking at a fire of this magnitude and the sheer challenges for fire departments or firefighters to try to approach this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things we think about when we're thinking about buildings that size and of that construction, which we really have to look at as we're responding and we get on the scene, is that type of construction for that building and the amount of fire and you know, just the things that they were confronted with when they got there, probably trouble with getting water and getting close enough to the structure initially. We have to think safety. So we definitely have to think safety of our members, and we've got to be really careful how we set up and how we approach that type of a fire.
Chief, that, I'm sure this is sometimes a source of frustration for you, because everybody, you know, that's one of the things, firefighting, everybody seems to have theories. They don't understand the intricate science involved and the instinct and the fact you just talked about safety. So we got all these theories, including, I don't know if you saw this, the President of the United States who said, why don't we just fly overhead and drop water from water tankers? That, you said that could be used to put it out. We can act quickly. Obviously, that it's much more complicated than that.
Correct. I mean, you know, part of the issues we have with an historic building, especially in Notre Dame, is that emotions run really high. Mm. You know, we know that there's a lot of sentimental value. There's a lot of religious value. There's a lot of people that you know, have just a lot of memories and things that, you know, are going to tug at our heartstrings a little bit. And we really can't approach it that way from the fire department side. Mm. You know, we have to look at it as, what's the safest way for us to attack it? What's the best way for us to get a water supply on it? Is it safe for us to make entry? And these type of buildings are what we call truss constructed. Mm-hmm. And we know that once the fire gets into the structure of the building, it becomes unsafe for firefighters to go into. So we have to start up what we call a defensive attack. We've got to figure a way to be in a safe area to attack it from the outside of the building.
You mentioned something interesting, and I'm glad you brought that up, because earlier we had architecture critic from the Chicago Tribune, Blair Kamen, on, and he talked about the flying buttresses within this Gothic architecture of the cathedral, and it was a lot of wood, 800-year-old wood, that essentially created the arches and the ribs of the entire interior of that cathedral. A lot of wood, I'd imagine a lot of fuel for that fire, and the dangers facing firefighters. I know the way you approach fires has changed over the years based on how safe that is for firefighters to even go into a building like that. Talk about that, the challenges of dealing with it.
Yeah, and that's an excellent point. You're talking about a very old building, a building that is probably a little weakened just because of its age. So you've got to take that into consideration. You also have to take into consideration that with that type of a truss construction, or the arches, as you put it, that kind of ties all the walls together. So as those things start to fail, as those things start to heat and start to burn, it weakens the entire structure. So what we do is we set up what we call a collapse zone, where we start to put our equipment either on the corners of the buildings or far enough away so that if one of those walls should fall, it's not going to kill one of our members. So, and again, there's a lot of emotions there, and emotions run real high. And it's the same for firefighters. You know, we want to go and save something. We don't want to lose anything. So we may try to do something perhaps a little unsafe initially to try and make an attack on that. But we have to always keep in the back of our mind that this is a dangerous building as far as construction goes.
And the height of it, the sheer height, the spire that was under construction, and there are some theories, and there is no cause that has anywhere near been ruled at this point, but one of the working theories has been this renovation that was underway around the spire. 10 stories of scaffolding, the sheer height of trying to get water to that, I guess it just boggles the mind.
Well, that's absolutely right. And plus, you know, I'm not 100% familiar with the building, only from what I've seen on pictures, but it seems like it's set back a little bit, which means it's probably a little bit tough even to approach with a piece of equipment, much less try to get hose lines close enough to it. And once fire has gotten to the point where the building is unsafe, we really got to be careful about where we place these hose lines, where we're going to place firefighters, and the safety of the public as well.
They've been able to save, breaking news this afternoon, that two of the towers were saved, two-thirds of the roof destroyed. Clearly that spire was also taken down, and there was some hopes that they could save the bell towers. So there are pieces of this that apparently seem to have survived. I suppose we have to wait. The interior, too, I'm sure that it'll take some time before they figure out exactly what was lost there. just so much to get to. And I can't, if firefighters wouldn't feel safe getting in there, I can't imagine the people who wanted to save all the relics and the historical and the significant items and culturally and, you know, all of the things inside of there that they wanted to get out. I can't imagine they would have been able to approach it.
Yeah, I mean, if it had been just a big vacant structure, probably nobody would have thought twice about just watching it burn to the ground. But when you put, you know, that kind of an emotion into, you know, an historical landmark building like that, yeah, I mean, the first thought is, hey, let's save this. Let's get in there. Let's do whatever we can. But again, we've got to be safety conscious, knowing that we can only do so much and knowing what our limitations are and just doing the best we can with what we're confronted with.
And on the subject of safety, I know initially they put out the call to tell people in Paris, do not show up here. Don't try to
don't
watch
come here.
It.
Please don't.
And that was not heard because so many people felt such a connection to this monument that they wanted to be there. So the other issue was, how do you fight the fire with thousands of people standing around? Yeah. Tough to do.
Yeah. I mean, you know, part of what we do early on is cordon off the area. Mm-hmm. And you know, sometimes we do with our fire trucks. But obviously, we try to get the police there as soon as possible. And in Chicago, we have a pretty good rapport with police, and they get in there really quick, and they cordon off that area. And it can be tough because, you know, like I said, this is something that runs really high as far as emotions. Yeah. And you know, and this is a landmark. I mean, you know, it's going to draw a lot of attention, and it's going to draw a lot of bystanders. So we really need to be careful.
No doubt about it, Steve Little. Battalion Chief for CFD, thank you for weighing in. Thanks for your time today. We appreciate
thanks,
it.
And Chief, thank you to you and all your guys and gals for everything they do for our city. We really appreciate it.
Appreciate
Ann and Richard, it's my pleasure. Thank you for what you do.
Awesome to hear from you. Coming up, the stories that matter with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis, here in studio, the Richard Roper. Joe's taking a couple days off. Ooh. Kevin Powell, you know him as K-Powell, pulling up a chair here in the studio. And our guest is Frank Ignatius, president and founder of BetChicago.com. So by now, everyone's heard about the guy who put $85,000 on Tiger winning it all and made $1.15 on it. There's an interview with him in Golf World right now. Hmm. He's eyeing up some new garage doors, he said.
I bet he is.
Very responsible guy. My background's in finance, so I'm going to invest all of it. So, you know,
he
we're going to
watch it grow. William Hill in Las Vegas.
Yeah,
biggest loss ever for them, correct?
Yes.
Biggest golf loss.
Yeah, there we go.
Sorry. Go ahead,
it's the biggest golf loss for William Hill that they've ever had.
In the history of golf betting, yes.
Wow.
It's just remarkable to see this because I guess was that quite a long shot bet with Tiger's history? What were the odds on Tiger?
No, it's not so much that it was a long shot. It's just one of those terrible cases for the sports book where the most popular guy in the most popular event actually came in.
Right.
So,
yeah, exactly.
You know, it just goes to show you that sports betting is not just a golden ticket for the house. There are certain scenarios like the Super Bowl this year where the popular team wins and the sports books lose. So Tiger's always the most popular bet on the board. And, you know, because of his recent absence from winning majors, it just turned out to be a perfect storm.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he was 12-1, I believe, right, Frank? Tiger was. And real, if you look at his performance to that moment, he probably should have been 20-1. But, of course, if the money comes in, you know, people sometimes don't understand this. This isn't the bookie saying, here's what we think. They're saying, here's how we're anticipating and adjusting to the public, which is why one of the reasons the Cubs usually don't have the greatest odds in Vegas because every Chicago Cubs fan who goes to Vegas puts $100 on the Cubs to win every year.
Yeah, the Cubs are the perfect example because it's just a perfect example of overvaluing a team. Ooh. So we're just trying to balance risk. And, you know, Tiger just turned out to be the winner. And it was just one of those perfect storms against the sports books.
How much more active are bettors and people that like sports gambling when he is there a number that you can put on it that shows how much Tiger moves the needle? Because everything we're seeing today, ratings, Nike golf apparel, Bridgestone is his golf ball. Everybody's reporting that there's increased web traffic to their sites, sales, stock, everything that Tiger touches turns to gold when he's playing well.
Urlacher's going to call him and offer him a little extra hair. Next thing.
How much more active are gamblers when Tiger is in contention or playing well?
Well, I think it mirrors the ratings. So if the ratings are great for Tiger in a major, I think the sports betting handle is going to follow that along. And I think what I would say is, although sportsbooks took a hit yesterday, I think in the long run, they're going to be happy with yesterday because it opened up a whole new market of people to betting on golf who didn't realize you could, and they're gonna read the story about the $85,000 at 14-1,
right?
And they're gonna see the different markets that are available in golf betting and realize, you know, now that the legalized market is expanding to more and more states, that this is a great sport to not only watch but to bet on. So maybe in the long run, sports books are gonna like the fact that they took yesterday's loss, because it's gonna be the added enthusiasm for the game and betting on that game.
And it is actually a bookie friendly sport overall, as you know, Frank, because we're talking about maybe 50 or 60 golfers in some of these major tournaments have a realistic chance of winning. So picking the favorite, picking the winner out of that is tougher than the Kentucky Derby or just about anything else. Can you speak a little bit, though? Now we talked about Tiger 12-1 win the Masters. What about the next major tournament?
So his odds have already dropped on the next major, which is the PGA in May, and the U.S. Open in June, which is at Pebble Beach, where back in 2000 he won by 15 shots. So
and he's won at Bethpage, where the PGA is this year.
That's correct. So there's going to be a lot of enthusiasm, and I don't think the sports books are going to make the mistake of having 14-1 or 12-1 anymore. With the added enthusiasm about Tiger, I think you're going to see 7-1, 8-1, like we saw in the late 90s and early 2000s.
Look, he could do it, but that's, you know, if you picking somebody to win a golf tournament, you're only getting 6-1. It's not a great bet for the average wagerer, but they won't care. They want to put their money on Tiger.
What else can you bet on within the world of, well, let's start with golf. What else can you bet on other than the winner of a major tournament?
Well, I think what's so great about golf betting is it's a perfect sport for live betting, which means bets that you make during the course of the round. So there's so many 6 to 7 minute breaks in between shots that it gives bettors plenty of time to recalculate the odds and get a new bet. So you can bet on what Tiger's going to make on each hole, or what his front nine score is, or back nine score, or even the odds to win the tournament constantly update every 5 minutes or so.
I mean, I could just visualize so many. If this thing, because I know we're going to dive into an update maybe on, you know, on legalizing gambling in Illinois, which a lot of people are pushing for. But you can just picture how all this is going to play out if you're at home, whether you're doing it on your phone or you're at a bar, and maybe you're a casual golf fan and you're watching with your buddies, and all of a sudden Tiger's in contention, and you can walk up to a kiosk and place a few bucks on a bet.
Up to a kiosk and eventually take your phone in your hand and go on your app.
That's what I'm saying. You can either do it on your app or if you're out. Yeah.
Micro betting, when you can start betting, you know, and this is a relatively new thing. It used to be, okay, there's a game at halftime, there's a new point spread. But this in progress stuff, Frank, maybe you can speak a little bit about this, where we're going to get to a point where if you're in the left field stands at a Sox game and Tim Anderson's at the plate, you're going to be able to bet on that at bat, right?
It's going to be as simple as sending a text message. So just like the apps that we use for all kinds of commerce, you're going to be able to use for all kinds of sports bets and all kinds of different markets. So, yeah, you don't have to be available at the beginning of the game. If you come in the third inning or the seventh inning or even later, there's always a market to bet on, and that's in every sport. So I think that's going to be really interesting. And I think the people who own professional teams are going to really like the fact that people are going to hang around a little bit longer and be interested.
Oh, there's no question.
It's
going to
be longer
sports
than the men's room at Wrigley Field in the seventh inning, or the beer line at Soldier Field is going to be the kiosk. And as we talked about, to be able to do that, you know, quickly like that, the revenue is going to be incredible. So where do we stand right now, Frank, with the state of Illinois legalizing sports betting, at least, you know, in the next year? Is it possible?
There are some stories that put it at even fall in time for football season. Is that realistic? I know you can't predict what's in the minds of state lawmakers and hearts, as they always say, but what do you think is realistic?
You know, we're very encouraged. This governor, I'm such a big fan of this guy because he is really pushing for this. And it seems like his influence is having effect on lawmakers, because they're a week or two away from presenting the final version of the bill. There's five versions out there right now. And what's encouraging about it is they're doing all the right things. They're including full mobile, so that it's not something that you just do in a sport, in a casino or a racetrack.
Okay.
The tax rate, for my taste, could be a little bit lower, but the key is...
What is it roughly? Can you tell us, or is it a complicated structure, like the tax code?
Ours, as you can imagine, is the second highest in the country. Like Vegas is 6.75%, New Jersey's 11, most states are 10, we're at 20. So not quite as bad as Pennsylvania.
That's why the governor likes it. He says $200 million
for the state right there, Frank. But listen, I tell you this all the time, I've written about this for decades now. the Illinois State Lottery, it's about 50% goes right off the top. When you're winning that $300 million, there's $300 million already going to the state. I know horse racing's probably close to 20%, maybe a 16% handle. So, you're paying for the privilege of doing it. To me, for the state of Illinois, there'd be such hypocrisy, and there has been throughout the years. Oh, we can advertise for the lottery in every neighborhood, and we want everybody to play the lottery. Hey, go bet on the ponies. Hey, in some bars, you can play the slots. But oh my gosh, betting on sports is the end of the society. Nonsense. And in fact, it could be argued, as you find out if you go to betchicago.com, the more knowledge you have, yes, you're taking risk. But there is skill involved as well.
It's coming out of the darkness, and I think the fact that other states are legalizing is a good warm-up for us, and I think people are warming up to the idea that, again, you're exactly right. Casinos are okay. Horses are okay. People are betting on sports anyway, so let's legalize
they
it and
are?
Tax it and bring it into the light.
And every state that's legalized it, it's been a hit in the state, right? Everything so far?
Yeah, New Jersey is the most shining example, and what's encouraging about Illinois is we're following the New Jersey model, it seems, which is full mobile, and we're sort of using their law as a template for ours. Gotcha. So, there are states like Mississippi who are not doing as well because they're not allowing for full mobile.
You got to have that micro betting. And, very quickly, too, we talked a little bit. There was a gambling series on Showtime. We're to the point now where the commissioner of the NBA is on the record talking about it. Russell Wilson is giving an interview talking about how cool digital fantasy sports betting is because people come up to him and go, hey, man, you completed that pass with, 2 seconds left. So, as Frank said so aptly and accurately, it's out of the darkness and into the light. It's America's true national pastime. It's not golf, baseball, basketball, football. It's wagering on sports.
Well, I've noticed it just the fantasy sports stuff that we do, like friends and family, whatever. It makes you interested in games Absolutely. You otherwise would never be interested in, and you're like kind of getting involved in the entertainment.
Todd Gurley still can't believe he didn't punch that one in last year. Never mind.
Right. I mean, I get it. It's a lot of fun. The question I have though for you is when I go to England in particular, you can bet on so many different things. You can bet on what color Tiger is going to wear, or whatever.
You can bet in real time
anything.
On the tennis tournaments on each serve that Serena's doing.
And I don't see that here. Am I missing it, or is it coming? I mean, what's going on there?
My favorite bet, which a few people have won recently, is when your child is born, you can bet on them to be the heavyweight champion of the world or play for a certain team.
Oh, I love that.
Rory McIlroy's father did that. He said he would win the British Open one day at 5,000 to 1, and when he won, he actually
therapy.
Went and cashed that ticket.
That's amazing.
Whoa. That is crazy.
Better get me some kids, Kev.
Yeah, it's all coming. So
retirement fund.
Frank, will you come back and talk to us as we continue to keep an eye on what's happening here in our state with sports gambling and beyond? And we appreciate you always checking in with us.
Yeah, we're getting
and letting
close. It's almost there.
I believe it. It does feel like it's real. You seem to have all the stars aligned now with the governor and legislators seemingly having a very positive approach to it now.
I mean, Illinois lawmakers are amongst the best in the world. I think we'd all agree on that, right? And they're doing such a great job. So, yeah, we're almost there.
Well, you are true.
They have a big hole to fill, Frank.
The current governor gets it more than any governor, I think, since Jim Edgar, in terms of understanding how wagering can benefit the state.
We do. So, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Frank.
Thanks, guys.
Frank Ignatius, president and founder of BetChicago.com. We're going to check what's happening. Are we checking the bottom of the hour? News with Kim Gordon.
French President Macron pledging to rebuild Notre Dame Cathedral as the devastating fire continues to burn.
Watch for Chicago's very own stories with Micah and Joe. That's Micah Mateer and, of course, Joe Donlin. Weeknights on WGN-TV News at 9.
Good show today, Richard.
Thanks,
Happy
Anna.
You're here. Rose is back on Wednesday. We had we have Lauren Lapka out at the Sox game tonight, and she's helping
she's,
with
the
ball.
She's presenting the first
presenting
ball,
the
delivering
ball.
The first ball. So it's not the same as throwing at the first pitch, but she goes out there, the first game ball, and officially delivers it. She's got her White Sox jersey with her name on it. She's also excited because I think she mentioned there's a Star Wars bobblehead giveaway.
It's unbelievable.
For how some little girls dream of becoming a Barbie princess or president of the United States.
Sure.
I mean, Lauren's in a White Sox jersey on Star Wars night with her family on
Doesn't
the South Side. That's a dream come true for her. Pretty cool. And I know we got White Sox baseball coming up right after this. And pretty cool, too. The White Sox actually took a couple of games from the Yankees in New York
nice.
On the series. And Tim Anderson hit a grand slam, and I believe he was the first White Sox player to hit a grand slam in New York since Frank Thomas a generation ago. So pretty cool moment for
Tim
Anderson, who, along with his beautiful bride, they just celebrated the birth of their second child, and he's having an amazing start. And the Sox are starting to show some sparks. Some
like
of the guys, Eloy hit two home runs. One went 7,000 feet. The other one went 150 miles. So that was, I'm a little exaggerating slightly.
I like you. You truly are a true lifelong White Sox fan. That wasn't the Masters going on when this game was on, or did I?
Someone told me at some point there was some golf. I should probably do a little picture in picture.
I was not aware of a grand slam, which normally would have hit my radar, but I think there's just too much TV watching. Between that and the Game of Thrones.
In New York City, the White Sox did a nice job. And Tim Anderson even, jokingly said, I think Tiger told me to hit that grand slam.
Oh, so. It was so, how cool was it to see the, sports community just rally around Tiger?
Everybody, and celebrities and regular folks, all of us, including the president, who is now giving Tiger a medal.
Oh, he is giving him a medal. There's a special ceremony for
special
his buddy.
Special medal for his buddy. They golfed together, and he called Tiger today. Tiger doesn't like to talk about politics, but they're friends.
Wow.
They've remained friends. They have certain things in common. There might have been some overlap. We don't know.
All right. Thank you, Richard. Again, this is The Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVellante. Rose back on Wednesday. Let's head up over to the newsroom and find out what's happening with Kim Gordon in 2 minutes.